in a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Bo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back into the podcast. It's good to be here. It's Thanksgiving week. It's time to feast. We're hungry. We're ready. I love this time of year. This is a great time of year. The holidays are fantastic, Mitch, because you get great food, you get time with family, you get time away from work, from the grind, from the, you know, the day to day, and it's beautiful. I'm looking forward to it. But we squeezed in a podcast anyways. We squeezed it in on a Tuesday night here before the holiday weekend. And I'm glad we're doing this, my friend. I'm looking forward to it.
You know what, Dallin? It is a time of year to be thankful for what we have. And you know what? I'm thankful for you, my friend. And I'm thankful for this podcast. I'm thankful for all the listeners out there. We appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in this week. And yeah, it's a great time of year. I feel like the holiday season starts around November 1st, like right after Halloween. That's when it's like, all right, I'm feeling jolly for the next 2 months. This is a good time of year. Yeah, it is my favorite time of year is this time of year.
It is great. And we are looking forward to this episode today. 149, as you saw on the docket. So next week, 150, we've got a lot of fun stuff in store. So I'm going to tease this now. Be tuned in on the Instagram. We'll be putting a post down early next week discussing what we'll be doing for that 150th episode. So if you don't already follow the Instagram, you'll want to be connected there at the Sports Hour, guys. Drop the follow on there. But we're looking forward to it because, you know, we love milestones. We love occasions to celebrate and have a little fun. This podcast is all about fun, but we've got some cool stuff planned next week.
I mean, we got stuff planned, but I just kind of I'm feeling the urge to just tell them what we're doing, though.
All right. I mean, why not?
It's a live show, people. We're going live. So make sure to tune it. We'll give you all the details again on the Instagram at the Sports Hour, guys, on Instagram. Stay tuned for all the details on when we're going live, what we'll be doing. We got some ideas for some fan interactions with you guys. We won't give away exactly what that is, but a lot of details still to work out, but a lot of fun stuff we got planned. So make sure you tune into that and be a part of the conversation. Like we always ask you to do, be a part of the conversation. This is your opportunity to do it.
Exactly. We've been saying it long enough. We figured, you know, it's time to hear from the people. That's what we need. So we're going to do it live for the 150 episode next week. So that should be fun. Again, check out the Instagram. We'll have some more information coming out early next week after the holiday weekend. Setting that up for next week. But in the meantime, Mitch, we've got a lot in store today as Thanksgiving week means Thanksgiving football. Three games on Thursday in the NFL, so we'll have to get to our picks at the end. Some Week 11 NFL recap, campus tour, as we are in the final week of the college football regular season, conference championship weekend next week, and then bowl season is upon us. So just at the end here of the college football season, college football playoff is in our sights. So a lot going on there that we'll have to get into, plus news and notes around the world of sports. And I mean world, Mitch, because we are talking World Cup in the news. So we are global today on the Sports Hour.
I wish I could do this in a different language, like just to make it more global, but I don't speak foreign languages very well. So in place of that, let's get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news. I I mean, if I could just say that in Spanish or Italian or German or French, like, that'd be so cool. But
that'd be awesome.
I think I just should learn how to say that in multiple languages.
You should hear. Yeah, you should learn. Let's get into the news in like 10 different languages and then just bust one out every time. Like just off, you know, this week or just, you know, Hungarian. Let's go. And we're just like, whoa, that's what was tough... that? That could that, be that... Hungarian is the four is like the fourth toughest language to learn in the world. So don't pick that one.
That'd be cool. Like, I heard, was it the hardest one in the world to learn is like Mandarin or something like that? Like, it's really hard to, like, that's what they speak over in China.
I don't know, but yeah.
If I just learned it in Mandarin, ooh, that'd be a heater.
Awesome. That'd be awesome. Let's hear it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this, Mitch. Time to bust out some Duolingo. Some
Episode 150, tune in. You might hear some foreign languages.
Wow. Okay. All kinds of stuff going on. I love it. Mitch, let's start the news with some NFL news. As it was announced today, the 2023 Hall of Fame semifinalists, 28 names on the semifinalist list for the NFL Hall of Fame induction next year. 28 modern era semifinalists. That list will be cut down to 15 in the coming weeks, and then a final vote in January will determine, you know, those the actual entrance this year. But five first-year eligible players are among those semifinalists, most notably Darrell Revis Island, first-year eligible here. Joe Thomas, the longtime Cleveland Browns tackle. Dwight Freeney, James Harrison, defensive stalwarts, and Jahri Evans, Mitch, who I had to look up before this podcast. We do an NFL podcast. I had to look this Hall of Fame finalist up. Played like 12 seasons, 11 of those with the Saints. A guard, 6-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro. Just, I don't know. Had no idea who he was.
I mean, that's the perfect example of the hog mollies up front never getting the credit that they're due. So
it's so true. It's so true. And shame on the child Dallin who didn't know who that was. I should have done better. Should have done my research better as a teenager. But, you know, alas, here we are. But 28 finalists, those are the five. I want to start with this, Mitch. Five first-year eligible players. Anybody on that list stick out to you as a guy who you see think could potentially get in year one?
You know, that's such a tough one. Like, it's exceptionally difficult to be a top tier corner in the NFL. And it's even harder to do it for multiple years in a row. That's why we say guys like Richard Sherman are, you know, a surefire Hall of Famers when they're done playing. Right. This is those type of guys. Darrell Revis was the best corner in the league for a long time. And, you know, he's the big one that stands out to me. I have, you know, the other guys that I'm really excited about, guys like Dwight Freedy and Robert Mathis and guys like that I would want to see get in, guys that we grew up with watching as, you know, they're top tier defenders, top tier pass rushers. Darrell Revis is the big one that sticks out to me. And I just, the adolescent Mitch says, yes, absolutely put him in. But like, grown-up Mitch, who has a much more developed brain now, says, I don't know if he is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think first ballot is tough, and Revis is definitely a Hall of Famer, right? There's no doubt. When you were the best at your position for a period of time in the league, I think that is one of the core criteria for being a Hall of Famer, is being one of, if not the best player at your position in the league for a period of time. And Darrell Revis was that. He had his own nickname for how shut down he was, right? I mean, when you've done that, you've accomplished something great. Is he first ballot, though? I don't know. I would argue that Joe Thomas has a stronger argument for being a first ballot Hall of Famer, Mitch. He played
100%.
10 full seasons in the NFL, 10 full seasons, and in those 10 seasons made a Pro Bowl in every single one of them. 10 full seasons, 10 Pro Bowls, 6-time All-Pro. His 11th season was cut short by injuries, and then he was gone. But, I mean, it does. You can literally not do better than that. It is.
No, and
what more could you ask for Joe Thomas to do to earn a spot? So for me, I'm like, shoot, if anyone deserves to get in first ballot, it's Joe Thomas. Let's be honest.
Well, and we talk about dominance at their position and being the best at their position for an extended period of time. Really, after Joe Thomas's rookie year, it was well established. He was the best or the second best offensive lineman, not just tackle, offensive lineman in the league. So you make a very valid point there that he probably has a little bit better of a case to get in on a first ballot than any one of those other guys. I'm looking at the other guys that are multi-time semifinalists and that have been here. There's some names that jump out to me that I'm like, we have to get them in. First of all, selfishly, Devin Hester has to get in. He's the greatest return man of all time. Special teamers never get the love that they deserve. Devin Hester should be in. Zach Thomas, another one. Linebacker for the Miami Dolphins, a one-time Dallas Cowboy in 2008. Was a top three middle linebacker in the league his entire career. He just happened to be playing at the same time as guys like Brian Urlacher and Ray Lewis and never got the recognition that he really deserved. And he played in Miami, which was, at the time, not the greatest team in the league, did not have the most success in the league. So those are two names to me that I'm like, we have to get them in at some point. May not be this year, but they have to get in at some point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I will also add there some of the guys that have been on the semi on this list for a while that are running out of opportunities. Torrey Holt's on there for the ninth time. He's a name that I think should be a Hall of Famer. Hines Ward and Darren Woodson are both on for the seventh time. Rondae Barber, sixth time. You mentioned Zach Thomas. Reggie Wayne, fourth time. So I do think that there's some guys that have been on there for a while, especially at the top of that list. Darren Woodson, Torrey Holt,
Rodney Harrison.
Yeah, Hines Ward. I think should probably get in. Steve Smith, my guy, Steve Smith, he's on the list. He'll get in eventually. I think the second, third year that he's been on, so he's got some opportunities still, but it'll be a great class regardless. But certainly interested in watching for the first year guys, Darrell Revis and Joe Thomas, where they sort of fit. Do they get close? Is one of them able to pull off that first time Hall of Famer?
I do have a quick question for you before we move on, because it's something we've brought up with your boy Luke Kuechly. And how dominant he was and how we feel that he should be a Hall of Famer. Maybe not on the first time on the ballot, but how much of longevity do you think plays into this? Because there's a name on here of a guy that only played 8 years in the league, but Patrick Willis was dominant at his position. And again, like Kuechly, a very short career. I mean, how much do we value those guys with shorter careers, but sustained dominance within that short period of time?
Yeah, ultimately, I think the Hall of Fame will become more accepting of those players as time moves on, as we see more top-tier players. When you have to discuss Calvin Johnson, right? And then you have to discuss Patrick Willis and Luke Kuechly and so on and so forth. I do think that those players, what even puts them in the conversation is the fact that though they had an 8 to 10 year career, they were dominant throughout. We're not talking late bloomers, right? We're not talking guys that took 3-4 years to come in. It's like year one, year two, these guys are it, and they are one of the tops at their position for the entirety of their career until it is finished, even if that is short-lived. I think that counts for something when it comes to the Hall of Fame. And like I said, I do think that those guys will be honored. Will it hurt your chances early? Will you lose your opportunity at a first ballot if you don't go 12, 15 years? Maybe, I guess. Is that fair? I don't know. But I think those will all get in eventually, those types of players,
Yeah, definitely.
But it is certainly interesting to see, and it has become a trend, and may become even more of a trend as time goes by. We'll certainly see. But always an exciting time of year to see the Hall of Fame classes form. And again, February Super Bowl week, right, is when we find out the actual finalist for the Hall of Fame class of 2023, and we'll look forward to seeing who this next year's entry, what it looks like. So,
absolutely.
Let's do our weekly Kraken update here. We got to talk about the boys in Seattle. Kraken 10-5-3 on the season, 2 wins in the last week since we last discussed over the Rangers. Yeah, the Kings still third in the Pacific Division, just 1 point back of those Los Angeles Kings a full 8 points back of Vegas, who is off to a dominant start this season. But Kraken holding strong, looking good. You love to see it continuing the strong start.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is technically, if we look at it outside of the point system that they have, and their point systems are a little bit different, they're outplaying the Kings right now. You know, they have the better winning percentage, fewer losses. They have the extra overtime loss. They've outscored their opponents by 9 goals. The Kings have been outscored by 4 goals. So you look at like how close that is. It's a 24-23 advantage for the Kings in the points. But, you know, the Kraken have been playing some really good hockey to start off the year. And let's hope this isn't just a hot start for the boys and there's this back half decline. Let's hope that this is a consistent continuation throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, you've seen better goalie play this year, which has been huge, as well as guys like Jordan Eberle continuing to shine and be solid pieces on this team moving forward. One player that we talked about last week, the great hope, the guy we're invested in, Shane Wright, the number 4 pick rookie this year. He's been sent down to the AHL team. That's the minor league. He's down in Coachella Valley right now on a little 2-week assignment. Basically, so I read about this because I didn't, we're still learning hockey. I'm not familiar with how the minor league system works, what that sort of looks like. So he's reassigned to the Coachella Valley Firebirds. That is their AHL affiliate. A conditioning loan is what it's called. He gets a 2-week maximum stay with the AHL team, and he qualifies because he's been a healthy scratch in the last 5 consecutive games. So if you're a healthy scratch of 5 consecutive games, then you could be taken down. It'll give him an opportunity. Just get on the ice. He's not getting playing time right now, and that's a good sign for Seattle. It means that things are going better this season than maybe they would have expected. Obviously, you'd love to see this young guy in the lineup, but I think this is a good thing to just get him some playing time, let him see some action, and then he'll come back up to Seattle here in a couple weeks and maybe get an opportunity to crack into the lineup a little more.
Yeah, the way I understand this minor league system is it's kind of like a combination between baseball's minor league system and NBA's G League, where it's you send the guy down in base, send the guy down to get some time on the ice. You send the guy down in baseball to get at bats, get some time on the field. Yep. But there's certain qualifying things that you have to meet to be able to get sent down. You got designated for assignment. That's okay. He got DFA'd, but he'll be back. He'll be back, and it's gonna be good for the young kid because he's an exceptional talent. He just needs time on the ice. He needs minutes right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just thought that was interesting. I was learning stuff this week, doing my searching on hockey minor leagues and what a conditioning loan was. I was like, what is he out of shape? He need to run? Like, what are we, what are we talking about? But that is not what that means. So there you go.
Yeah,
we got to talk some World Cup here in the news as we discuss World Cup 2022 happening right now in Qatar. And I want to say, first off, I really want to start with this, Mitch. It is absurd and disgusting that FIFA is having the World Cup in the country of Qatar, who is running rampant with human rights violation. There are thousands of migrant workers who died building the stadiums that they're playing in this week. And it's really awful that they've done this for money. And I think it's just a shame. So I want to start by saying that, because the on-product field, like, we're sports. Sports will be played, whether it's in Qatar, whether it's anywhere else. The World Cup will be played somewhere. But I think context is important, and it's important to recognize in this moment, as great as the product could be, we can get fun about sports, but it's not good. We should not be giving countries like this millions of dollars and getting them opportunities to show themselves off on the world stage in this sort of manner.
No, absolutely not. That's what sucks about this whole World Cup. I think soccer stinks in it, period. I can respect the World Cup because it is an international event, like Olympics. I can respect that. But I hate that countries can like buy the rights to host the World Cup. Like I think that's just ridiculous. And there should be a committee that decides who's going to hold it, like the IOC does with, or I'm not IOC. That's not right. But whoever, you know, what the board is that decides who hosts the Olympics, you know, that's...
I think that was right, actually.
Oh, okay.
That was right. Perfect. Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know what the acronym stands for, but...
I know that, you know, over there, they have very strict rules of as far as consumptions of alcohol, and Budweiser paid like $75 million to sponsor the event, took the $75 million and then said, nope, we're not selling beer at our events. And it just...
Two days before the World Cup began.
It just seems like a greedy money grab in a country with all sorts of civil rights issues that are just quite honestly appalling. So I think that the World Cup committee needs to really rethink about how they figure out who's hosting their event.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with the situation, there are certainly outlets, videos you can watch with some background on how Qatar even acquired this bid in 2010, and what behind it. Reach out to me if you want questions about it, because I've done plenty of digging myself and interest ahead of this World Cup. But I just want to start with that, because we'll talk about sport for the rest of the World Cup, and we'll enjoy that. And I've certainly enjoyed the sport of it. But I do think context is important. But Mitch, this World Cup matters because the U.S. is back. We didn't make it in 2018 in what was probably the biggest American disappointment since
since 2012 Olympic basketball. Remember, yeah, they had that dream team, and they, or is that 2008 Olympic basketball where
it was the good one. I don't remember. Yeah.
Oh,
I know what you're
four,
talking
2004,
about.
2004.
The Athens. I think we Athens got destroyed. Games, anyway, yeah. Whatever it was. The point is yes, major disappointment. Didn't make the World Cup in 2018 in Russia. Now, the U.S. team is back. They had their first match on Monday against Wales. Draw 1-1 against Wales. Not great. You wanted to beat Wales. That was like who you're kind of competing with in this group stage. They'll take on the Bloody Brits on Friday. Black Friday, Mitch, and we got England on deck, who is the favorite in this group. England's going to be tough. Draw at best. If you're the U.S., you're hoping. And then they'll play Iran next week. That's the final team in that group. So, U.S. with the draw on Monday, you need to get a win. You know, if you could draw against England, it's a miracle. You're probably going to lose, but we got some work to do. But it was a good, you know, actually, that was the first, Mitch, I watched all 90 minutes of U.S.-Wales. That was the first full soccer game I've ever watched in my life.
I'm sorry.
It was kind of interesting.
Am I just being close-minded? Am I being too close-minded here?
I think you're a little. Here's what I'll say. As a non-soccer person, non-football person, one thing I love about the NFL, one thing I love about American football is how much of a strategy it is. It's human chess, right? It's people moving boards across, you know, people across a real-life battlefield and outmaneuvering and outthinking each other. And in a lot of ways, I didn't realize soccer very much a chess match in that same right, where you're sort of biding your time, waiting for the right moment to strike, taking advantage, always being in position to make your move when you need it the most because you have limited opportunities. So it does make for a very long, drawn out game at times. When the action hits, though, it hits. And I think that strategy behind it is really interesting. So it's kind of fun. Maybe, you know, if you're not doing anything on Friday morning, you tune into some U.S. England soccer, Mitch.
I mean, I would say the chances of that are very, very low, but you know what, if you would like me to, I'd watch it. I just want to mention, England, I do know England, very, very good soccer country.
Yes.
I do believe that when I was looking through the odds for the World Cup, just for fun, they had one of the highest odds to win it.
Mm-hmm.
Very solid soccer club over there. And, I'm not worried. I mean, 1776, bro. Does that ring a bell?
We've been underdogs before.
Does that ring a bell? So.
I ain't scared
of you, red coat.
You think George Washington was scared?
Nah, he ain't scared.
The odds. He didn't need betting odds to know he was gonna win that revolution.
He took his ass and he crossed the Hudson or the Potomac, the Hudson River.
Potomac. Yeah. The Potomac. Yeah.
It was the Potomac. Yeah. He ain't scared of you.
Over cover at night. Exactly. Yeah. So listen, great stuff. One other, interesting thing. This happened this morning. Argentina, Messi, Argentina, one of the huge favorites in this World Cup. Brazil, Argentina, huge favorites, as always. They fell to Saudi Arabia today in one of the biggest World Cup upsets maybe ever. This is huge in terms of like what is – I mean, this is a Virginia UMBC. This is a 16-1 sort of situation when it comes to the World Cup. This is unprecedented for something like this to happen. So, Argentina will have to bounce back. I'm sure they'll make it out of this group stage. But you love upsets, so we're all about it. Let's see them all. So there you go. Yeah. World Cup, Mitch. You got to get used to it. You got a couple weeks of World Cup.
Okay. Yeah, I'll get used to it. I'll probably watch some stupid soccer.
Okay. That'd be good. Just for the U.S. Just for U.S. England.
You know what? For America, I'll do it. For America.
Don't watch U.S. Iran. That's not going to be, that's not going to be a fun soccer game to watch. So, yeah, I got to worry about that one.
There's some mystery there, too. I don't know. Sorry. Go ahead.
Isn't that the funny thing about the World Cup is, like, in the midst of all this, there's, like, active geopolitical things happening. U.S.-Iran facing off on the soccer field and also in the world. It's like, interesting. Just a weird dynamic,
Very weird dynamic.
Fascinating. So there you go. That's it for the news, Mitch. Let's jump over to the campus tour. Oh, wait, before we do the campus tour, we can do this in the campus tour. It doesn't matter. It's all part of college. We've got an entry to the Boys Club.
We do have an entry to the Boys Club. And quite frankly, I will admit mistake. I missed a founding father.
Oh.
I missed a founding father. And how this guy did not get any of the founding fathers is a disgrace. He is the leader of the quote-unquote boys. I mean, this guy is an electric factory in everything that he does. The boomstick himself, Mr. Pat McAfee, has to be in the Boys Club. And he is getting into the Founding Fathers realm because I quite honestly, he should have been there from the get-go. And the fact that I missed him is embarrassing, a tragedy. I apologize to Mr. McAfee. And, he's in. He's got to be in. Got to be in.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, too, I think what really made this solidified to me is seeing, he's been great on College Game Day this year, right? First off, fantastic addition. He's big, huge. Who could have saw that coming, right? That he would be great on College Game Day.
Right.
Turns out he's great. In College Game Day this week, was in Bozeman, Montana for the Montana State matchup, big time matchup in the FCS level. And Game Day made the trek to Bozeman for College Game Day and did the show in 7-degree weather, coldest game day that they've ever done. And I thought that they deserved a shout out for that because this kind of stuff, they need to just do this stuff more often, Do the Tulane's Cincinnati's, do the Montana States, do the Jackson States, do the, because listen, you could do Texas, Oklahoma, you could do Tennessee, Georgia, you could do those any year, anytime, they're always going to be there. But these one-off unique matchups that are build up hype for the right moment, like those don't come around every year. They took advantage of a great opportunity here and you love to see it. And I hope they continue to do more of that. And Pat McAfee's a star on College Game Day. He is fantastic.
Oh, he's outstanding. And you bring up a great point, man. Everyone's seen him do Tuscaloosa. Everyone's seen him do Ann Arbor and Columbus and Penn State, Happy Valley. Everyone's seen them do those. Man, get up to Montana. Man, exactly. Go up to Minnesota in mid-November and let's see some. That gritty time of the football season and be a part of that atmosphere. They did a fantastic job last week. And Pat McAfee is he's going to be if he's in this for the long haul, he's going to be a great addition for when Lee Corso finally decides to hang it up. Yeah, they got that big personality that's going to be able to fill those shoes very, very well.
Yeah, and it's great, Mitch, because he is his own guy with his own brand. He's not doing a Lee Corso. He's not replacing Lee Corso. He is just Pat McAfee.
Right.
But he, as you said, he fills that void in a really great way. So you love to see it. Yeah, Pat McAfee should have been a founding member of the Boys Club, but he's in. So that's all that matters. You know, we got him in there.
That's
Mitch, let's go to our week recap. Week 12 in the world of college football. As we look at the top four in the rankings, the four undefeated teams remaining, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU, all four of those teams had tough matchups, close scares, a lot of road matchups for these teams, but all four prevailed, snuck by with victories. Georgia earned a 16-6 win over Kentucky. Kentucky scored a touchdown late in this one, so, I mean, it almost was a shutout. Georgia pretty dominant in this one, but not a super convincing win by any means. Ohio State beats Maryland 43-30 on the road. Maryland feisty in this one late. Illinois and Michigan. Michigan surviving late against Illinois. Good Illinois team, but, at home, in Ann Arbor for this one, and Michigan skirts by with the win. And then TCU, number four TCU on the road in Waco at Baylor. Game-winning field goal as time expires to win that one and keep the undefeated season alive. So all four teams, not necessarily convincing wins, not big resume-building wins, not big-time matchups, but they all got it done. They all remained undefeated and kept themselves in position for the college football playoff.
Yeah, I mean, this was must win for the top four this week, especially before going into week 12. It just helps your odds that much more of staying in that playoff race. And man, some tight ones. There's a huge matchup this week that we'll get into when we get to our game day picks. But you know, Michigan pulling out the tight one over Illinois is you know, will make you pucker up a little bit if you're a Michigan fan, especially coming down to the big matchup that they have this week.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest story of this week is probably number five, Tennessee, falling. Hendon Hooker injured in this game in the second half. He's got a torn ACL. He is out for the remainder of the season. So Hooker is gone, and Tennessee could not muster a win. They got just destroyed by South Carolina on the road, 63-38. This Tennessee defense has been a problem all year, but Hendon Hooker and the offense have been able to keep them alive throughout the season until late, and without him, not enough there for the Vols. So that, I mean, that pretty much, that knocks them completely out of playoff contention at this point. They weren't going to get to the SEC championship game anyways, but if you could say, you know, one loss to Georgia and that's it, you know, maybe in a world there could have been a scenario that they were in, but certainly at this point they are out, and we'll be hoping for a best of New Year's Six game. Tough blow for Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, even when Tennessee was number one in the nation, like, we knew how great that offense was, but still, and like, you talk about how great Tennessee is. Tennessee's awesome. Tennessee's great. And they're still in the back of your mind. You're like, man, but that defense is an issue, and it's going to come back and bite them in the ass, and it has twice now. So once again, South Carolina this last week, and then Georgia, whose offense isn't super impressive anyway. So it's almost like in hindsight now, you should have seen the fall coming at some point, but not to take anything away with how good Tennessee is, but it's almost like a man, we should have seen this coming. We should have seen it coming.
Yeah. Teams this imbalanced don't usually make it at the end. You've got to have an elite unit, but you've got to have top 25 units across the board, right? I mean, we just don't see national champions and legit playoff contenders that have one clear deficiency on the team. It's one of my issues with a team I want to talk about now, which is USC, Mitch, because we had two big Pac-12 matchups, two huge matchups when it determined, would the Pac-12 still have playoff hopes? What would the hierarchy playoff Pac-12 championship game look like? USC gets the win at UCLA, 48-45. Again, high-powered offense, Caleb Williams. They got it done on the road. Huge for USC as it keeps their playoff hopes alive. And really, in my opinion, if they win out at this point, and I think we discussed this last week, but if they win out at this point, I think they should be in. When you consider Michigan and Ohio State is going to have one loss and not play in a Big Ten championship game, and then the only other competition ahead of them is LSU, who has two losses and would have to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game to even have a conversation.
Right.
So USC is in a very good spot, but yet, Mitch, USC has a sus defense, and they have had a sus defense all year, and it has gotten better. But this was the thing I've been talking about since week two or three, right? When USC was looking so good, and I was just like, man, the defense still worries me. It hasn't bit them too much yet, besides that loss in Salt Lake City against the Utes a few weeks ago. Other than that, it's, you know, they've survived. Will it be their demise in the Pac-12 championship game? Who knows? They are locked into that. So whether they lose against Notre Dame or not, they're getting there. But a loss to Notre Dame would take them out of the playoff. Very important win against UCLA, though. Huge, important win. Keeps their playoff hopes alive.
I mean, you and I talked about it last week when we were making the pick for this game. Of it's going to be a shootout. Like, take the over. Yep. Take the over. Yeah. It's going to be a high-scoring game. And sure enough, it was. Defense at USC has to lock down, though, in these last couple weeks. They have to lock down if they want to win out and keep this rolling, keep their playoff hopes alive. Just like we saw with Tennessee, the offense by itself cannot get you there. You have to play good defense.
Yeah, for sure. The other big Pac-12 matchup, Oregon and Utah, the Ducks get it done at home in a defensive battle. Bo Nix played in this one. He was questionable coming into the game. He was clearly banged up, clearly not the same guy, but he was efficient. It didn't matter. They got it done. It was an ugly win, not the way that they've won this season, but 20-17, defense showed up big for Oregon. It knocks Utah, who is a top 10 team at that point. It essentially knocks them completely out of any playoff conversation, any hope that they could have had. The Pac-12 is now going to come down to USC, who's locked in the Pac-12 championship game. If Oregon beats Oregon State, they will go to the Pac-12 championship game to take on the Trojans. If they don't, there is some other weird scenarios where things could happen, but the highly likely scenario is that we're going to see the Ducks and the Trojans in Vegas in the Pac-12 championship game, which is a matchup we didn't get in the regular season, Mitch. So that's the hope. That's the matchup I hope we get, because I do think those have been the two best teams from this conference this year. And I do think it would be, if Bo Nix is healthy, if he could get, if he could be fully healthy for that game and they're on, that could be an offense that is going to challenge that USC defense. If he is at full strength.
If we get that matchup in the Pac-12 championship game, the over under could be set at 120, and I'm taking the over. Like, that's going to be, there are going to be so many points scored in that game. It's going to be stupid. So, yeah, I mean, good win for Oregon. I think the defense stepped up and played pretty well. I know that Utah's offense isn't anything super exciting, nothing to write, write home about. Cam Rising has been very hot and cold this year. So it was a good opportunity for Oregon to have a bounce back game defensively and got the job done at home like they should and probably like they expected. I don't think they expected to lose to Utah at home. So a good win for the Ducks.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll have a big matchup against their in-state rival this week that will be a part of our picks. So another Pac-12 matchup to preview. Mitch, let's go to the Heisman watch, our top five Heisman rankings this week. And to review last week, the list went as follows. 1-5, Caleb Williams at 1, Hendon Hooker at 2, Drake May at 3, CJ Stroud at 4, and Max Duggan at 5. Got a new top five this week, Mitch. Tell the people what we got.
No change at the top. We're still going to have Caleb Williams number one on our list. CJ Stroud makes the leap up to number two. Max Duggan makes a leap from 5 to number 3. Hendon Hooker drops from 2 to 4, and then Drake May drops from 3 to 5.
Yeah. Thought process here, right, with Stroud and Duggan remaining undefeated on the season, and Drake May and Hendon Hooker both suffering losses, second losses on the season. Hooker obviously now is going to be out for the remainder of the season. It's going to hurt his chances moving forward, but it seemed hard to put those guys behind May and Hooker, who had two losses. So got to bump them up. But I mean, Williams is balling out this year. The stats are crazy for him. Obviously the signature win against UCLA, but when he's got 40 combined touchdowns on the ground and through the air, you know, 3,500 passing yards. I mean, he's been incredible. So, I mean, I could see things changing if he has a bad week. If Stroud, I mean, this is a big week for CJ Stroud. I'll say that, Mitch, with the matchup against Michigan. If he has a huge game against the Wolverines, the number three team in the country, you know, maybe we could see the Ohio State quarterback at top of this list.
We certainly could, even though he's had the bad weeks. We definitely could see him at the top there. I got to say, it hurt a little bit to bump Drake May down because the numbers are still there. But you talked about, like, you know, the winningest pair. He has the 39 total touchdowns. He's rushed for over 200 yards more than Caleb Williams. But the winning matters. And Caleb Williams has won more than Drake May this year. The loss this last week that UNC took against Georgia Tech was a massive blow to his Heisman hopes. So, you know, a guy that's balling out and he has one bad week at this point of the year, when it comes to Heisman talks, that can be make or break for you. And in our eyes, that was a little bit of a break for him. And he's going to lose some consideration, I guess, on our list.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, I hate to see it, but that's how it goes. And that's why we do the update every week, you know, because things can change. Mitch, upset of the week. We got two mentions here. Obviously, South Carolina over Tennessee. This was the biggest upset based on the line, as Tennessee was favored -22.5 on the road. Gamecocks getting it done there. But we had a great group of five upset as well.
Yeah, Navy over UCF. UCF, who was number 20 at the time, gets the loss to the Midshipmen. Look, Navy stinks. Navy is not a good football team. And for them to drop to Navy was just, I mean, really bad look for a team that we had a lot of promise about. You know, maybe could be have a top 15 finish, could be winning that MAC, and it's AAC. AAC, could have been a big thing for them. And now sitting at 8-3, the road gets a hell of a lot tougher for the Golden Knights.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a really bad Navy team. Inexcusable to lose this game at home. And the good news for UCF, Mitch, is it is their second loss in conference play, so it drops them behind Tulane and Cincinnati. But those two teams have to play this weekend, and UCF has head-to-head wins over both of them. So UCF is going to make the American Athletic Conference Championship game, if my understanding is correct, and they'll knock out the loser of that Tulane Cincinnati game. So huge stakes ahead in the American Athletic Conference, despite this, you know, because of this ugly loss from UCF this past week.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Mitch, player of the week. We got two nominees. We talked South Carolina, Tennessee already. So Spencer Rattler, quarterback, Tennessee's quarterback, South Carolina, former Oklahoma Sooner. 438 yards and 6 touchdowns against the Volunteers. Huge day for Rattler, who's been up and down this season, but surprisingly good, I think, at South Carolina. And, you know, I say with another good season in the SEC, if he comes back and they win 9-10 games next year and he looks even better, you know, he was the expected number one pick in the draft, right, headed into last year. So that's always going to be there with him. Another good season at South Carolina, back-to-back good seasons. Maybe he could redeem himself enough to be in a draft eligible conversation, top 100 conversation. You know, certainly maybe not number one pick ever again, but good to see for him, you know, turning it around and having some success at South Carolina.
Yeah, that was such a disappointing run he had last year. It's good to see him turn it around at South Carolina and put himself put together a really decent self, or holy smokes. Can I just talk, put together a really decent season for himself. Holy, that's like a tongue twister. Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, it can get you sometimes.
It can get you sometimes. We got another nominee for player of the week though. Benjamin Morrison, quarterback from Notre Dame. They got the big win over Boston College, shutting them out 44-0, picking off Emmett Moorhead three times in that game. A big, big night for the young man from Notre Dame, just making Boston College, who we talked about, who's not having a good season, has had some big upsets. We talked about their loss to UConn just a few weeks ago. Continued struggles for the Boston College Eagles, and Benjamin Morrison having a big, big night.
Yeah, got to shout out the defensive players when they ball out because they never get enough respect. And for a true freshman, this kid, Benjamin Morris, the corner for the Fighting Irish. So coming up big, 5 picks on the season for him, 3 in this game against Boston College. So big plays there. Best moment, best play of the week, easily. TCU's game-winning field goal. Bazooka is the play. That's the call. That's what they call it. They practice this. Sonny Dyke said it after the game. He said, "I wasn't worried. We practiced this. Run onto the field with 10 seconds, line up for the field goal and hit it. No timeouts left. They had to execute it. They needed the game-winning field goal. No ties here. Like, they would have lost the game if they don't get this off. But they execute at the highest level. Kicker nails the kick. TCU walks away with the victory. That was impressive, to say the least. I mean, just the execution there. Execution out of 1,000. You love to see it.
Yeah, you do love to see it. I mean, there's just great execution on the part of TCU. I'm not saying that it should happen now, but I think if we give a couple more years of good TCU football from Sonny Dykes, I think we're looking at a potential NFL head coaching candidate. This guy continues.
Wow.
He may not want to leave college football. You know, some guys don't want to leave, and I wouldn't blame him one bit if he builds up the program that he's building at TCU. But, you know, this guy has done a fantastic job with this TCU team, and their execution is flawless, and it was put on display in that game on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you make the college football playoff in your first year as a head coach, Power 5 level, then yeah, I mean, anything's on the table, I think, at that point. I think that's fair to say, and he is really doing an incredible job there. This story of TCU this season, one of the best in college football. We've been enjoying college football playoff rankings reaction. These came out earlier this evening. Again, we're recording this on Tuesday, November 22nd. Top 6 is as follows. Top 4 remains the same. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU, all the 4 remaining undefeated teams. One of them, for sure, will not remain undefeated after this week. Mm-hmm. LSU moves up to number 5. USC moves up to number 6 ahead of Tennessee, who lost. They were at number 5. The rest of the top 10 as follows. Alabama at 7. Clemson at 8. Oregon at 9. Tennessee falls to number 10. What are your thoughts on this top 10, Mitchell? I'll get your I've got some things I want to talk about here, but give me your thoughts on how this top 10 shaped out.
I mean, look, the right 4 are there, right? You can't keep the 4 undefeated teams out of the top 4. You just can't.
Those are easy.
Yeah, those are easy ones. I still think Michigan is a better football team than Ohio State. So maybe flip those two. I think TCU can really challenge Ohio State, but maybe not better than them right now. So I wouldn't put them any higher than 4. But look, I mean, the right teams are there. It's missing a certain crimson red A in that mix, but for the right reasons, we're not there. But you know, I don't have any huge issues with the way that this one's panned out.
Yeah, you know, I do feel a little weird about 2-loss LSU ahead of 1-loss USC.
Sure.
The problem with USC is that they just don't have any signature wins on the season until the one that they just got this past week against UCLA. Up until that point, the best win they had was against Oregon State, who is a good team, but I mean, no one's like, hey, that's a big resume builder for the Trojans. So that certainly hurts them. LSU's 2 losses, opening game, 1-point loss to Florida State and then losing to Tennessee, but wins over top 10 teams in Ole Miss and Alabama certainly helps them out in that conversation. But so that one I felt a little weird about. But ultimately, USC is going to have a top 15 opponent in Notre Dame this week. And then the Pac-12 championship game against another top 15 opponent. That'll be enough. You know, the resume will come for the Trojans. But I think right now that the way that plays out is probably right. The one that I think they got wrong is Clemson at number 8 and not at number 7. And there's no disrespect to your Alabama squad.
No, not at all.
Clemson is a 1-loss team who should in my thought, theoretically be in the college football playoff conversation. But they're ranked at number 8 by the committee, Mitch. And at this point in the season, in the history of the college football playoff, there has never been a team to make the playoff who's been ranked lower than number 7 at this point in the rankings. So if the playoff committee is telling us anything, it's that they don't view Clemson as a legitimate playoff contender. Is that fair? Is that right? In your estimation, a one-loss Clemson team whose only loss, an ugly one, but only loss was to Notre Dame, who turns out is a top 15 team and everybody wants to think is really good again. They don't have impressive wins. The best, most impressive win against Syracuse turns out Syracuse kind of sucks. NC State, that was a good win. Turns out they kind of suck. The ACC hasn't helped them out very much. Is there a conversation for Clemson to be here, or are they perfectly positioned? Should they be on the outside of the playoff conversation?
I mean, here's the deal. Is the ACC is kind of the redheaded stepchild of the Power Fives, right? Like, I feel like that if you're
really in the Pac-12, but it feels like this year,
sure,
it kind of is the ACC.
Look, it matters where your signature wins are. It matters who you play. It matters who you beat and who you lost to. But I still feel like there is a unhealthy and overwhelming subjectivity to how the College Football Playoff Committee decides who's getting in and who's getting out. And while the numbers matter, their subjectivity also matters. And I feel like that if they don't pass the eye test, then they're going to get that knock. I'm going to say, quite honestly, I've been a big critic of the College Football Playoff Committee, particularly last year when they were keeping Cincinnati out forever,
right?
When they were clearly better than the teams ahead of them before they got in. Clemson doesn't really pass the eye test for me. And though they have the big wins, and like you said, playing in the ACC doesn't help them as much, there's still that eye test quality that is just not quite up to snuff for me when it comes to Clemson. So I'm not saying that they should be ranked behind Alabama. 7 should be fine, but I understand why they're 8, because I understand, the subjectivity of the eye test, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm with you. I think as we've talked through this, I think I'm on board with Clemson where they're at. And I will say this as I think about it. If you just replaced Clemson and everything about this and just called them Wake Forest, would they even be in the top 10? Would they even be in the top 10?
No.
Based on their strength of schedule, based on their wins, based on their loss. I mean, if it wasn't the Clemson Tigers, who have been national champions, who have been in the playoff, if it was some other random ACC team like a Virginia or like a Pittsburgh, would we even have them in the top 10 at all? Would they even be close? And so I don't think so. And I think rightfully so, because they haven't proven it. And so I think 7 I'd been fine with. But I do think on the outside of the – I don't think they're legitimate playoff contenders. If they beat South Carolina, if they beat North Carolina in the next two games, I don't think they'll get in. I don't think they should.
And we could circle this all back down to something we've talked about. It seems like every week this year it's about the brand. Yep. It's about the brand. I mean, look at – with the exception of TCU, which isn't a national brand like everyone else, look at the other people that are there in that top – 7 ahead of them: Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, LSU, USC, Alabama. Like, they're all the big brands. And is Clemson one of those big brands? Sure.
Yes.
And that's why they're there. And that's what makes your point about Wake Forest that much more valid. If it was Wake Forest is the brand of Clemson, so they're not going to be in the top 10.
Yeah, they'd be 12.
They'd be 12, 13th, So, yeah. It's an unhealthy amount of subjectivity right now in the College Football Playoff Committee. And so for that reason, I think they're perfectly placed now at 8.
I mean, and listen, ultimately all of this will be solved when we have an expanded playoff, because you're just opening the field up to more teams. So we don't have to debate, is Clemson the 5th or the 7th best team? It doesn't matter. They're going to be in, and they're going to play another good team, and then we'll know if they're good or not, if they deserved it or not, right? Like, there will still be debate on who the 12th team is in, who's the final spot, who do those, there will always be debate. But when you open the field up to that 12 number, you're going to, you're going to get rid of these really tough conversations of, you know, how does a one-loss Michigan or a one-loss Ohio State team potentially not make a playoff? And one of those teams might this year, depending on how it plays out. So very interesting. Just a few notes about the rankings, and we'll go to our games to watch this week. Highest ranked group of five team, Tulane, up to number 19. UCF falls some spots because of the loss to 22. Cincinnati at 24. So those are the three group of five teams, all American Athletic Conference teams. So that's where your group of five New Year's Six opponent's going to come from. Again, Tulane, Cincinnati will play. Winner will likely play UCF in the American Athletic Conference champion. That team is going to earn the New Year's Six bowl berth. Cotton Bowl opportunity there. Two teams to jump in the top 25, Mitch. Texas back in the top 25 at 23, and Louisville up into the top 25 here at number 25. So there you go. Any other thoughts on the rankings before we jump over here?
I know it's coming down to late in the season, and you know we're going to see a lot of three lost teams in the bottom part of the top 25, but Texas and Louisville don't belong here.
Four
they
lost
don't.
Teams. Yeah, that's
they don't belong here.
Yeah, I love Louisville. I think they're a fun, scrappy team. I was excited to see, hey, wow, they're getting a shout out. But this seems, again, we talked about it earlier. I said this with the rankings before. They will do things to prop up other teams' resumes. And that the Louisville thing, to me, looks like a let's bump Clemson's resume, right? Clemson beat Louisville. They need some help. The ACC sucks this year, right? There's no good teams in the ACC. North Carolina didn't help them by losing this last week, right? That could have been a big-time championship matchup. Now, not so much. You know, Louisville's now ranked the top 25. Maybe that helps Clemson's resume. But, yeah, I know I'm with you.
I mean
the
four-loss
teams shouldn't be in here.
And this is where – I turn around and I start chewing the college football playoff committee out again. Is what makes you think that Texas is a better team than UTSA? Like, what makes you think that a two-loss UTSA team,
Roadrunner team, yeah,
is better than a four-loss Longhorns? Like, that just makes no sense to me. So, yeah,
I am 100% with you, Mitch. I absolutely UTSA was the one team that I am just sitting here like.
How?
What's up? What are we doing?
Yeah. How are they not in?
9-2 on the season, the Roadrunners. They've shown consistency, and their only two losses, Mitch, were to first game of the season, number 24, Houston, and at Texas. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's probably the only reason why Texas gets in over them is because they have the head-to-head win, which is
well, that's dumb because they're a four-loss team. At that point, I don't care about head-to-head, you know?
Exactly. At that point, it don't matter, but, you know, I digress. All right, Mitch, let's jump to our games to watch this
week. How do I praise them for their common sense on Clemson and then knock them for their lack of common sense when it comes to that? I don't know. I'm sorry. They're an infuriating board of people. So
Yes, 100%, Mitch. We had good weeks last week in the picks, Mitch. I had another clean sweep, perfect record, back-to-back weeks with perfect scores. So I feel pretty good about that. The problem for me is that you also, I got 6 points. You got five. You were all but perfect with only one blemish on the resume. So unfortunately for me, I wasn't able to cut this lead very much. But to review the picks we had, Utah and Oregon, we both picked the Ducks. Both got a point there. NC State at Louisville, we both picked the Cardinals. I locked Louisville -4. We both get the win. I get the lock there. Boise State at Wyoming. I picked the Broncos. You picked the Cowboys. Boise State gets the win on the road. So that's where we differed on the point. And then USC, UCLA. We both picked the Trojans. Mitch locked USC -2.5. Trojans win by 3. So we both get a point. Mitch gets the lock. And that's where we sit. 6 points for Mitch, 5 for me. That puts us on the season. Mitch sitting at 34 points. I'm sitting in at 34 point difference. 2 weeks left. Final week of the regular season here, and then conference championship week next week, which is going to be a doozy. It's going to be wild. We've got some wrinkles to throw in this thing for the final go. It'll be no holds barred next week. Anything can happen when it comes to the conference championship week, so that'll be fun. But we got one more week ahead of us, Mitch, to I set these margins. Let's see if I can maybe cut it. Let's see if you can expand it.
And remember when you were about to concede? Like, you were about to concede, and here we are. We got this week, and then we got next week where all hell could break loose, and you wind up pulling this one out. So, like, never say never. Never say never. Sorry, that was the dumbest thing I've done.
Justin Bieber taught me that.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was I need to apologize to America. That was stupid. That was the dumbest thing I've said ever. I just referenced Justin Bieber. Take my man card away. Why did I do that?
This is a pro Biebs podcast. It could be.
Biebs, all right. I just get that was. Anyway, let's get into our picks, man. I need to move on from that. That was a rough look. That's a tough look.
Mitch, I'm sure Justin Bieber's looking forward to this matchup between the Irish and the Trojans this week. Number 15 Notre Dame coming to LA to take on number 6 USC. USC's locked in the Pac-12 championship game. This is not going to affect that at all. But what this does affect, Mitch, is USC's playoff hopes, because a loss here, it's going to take them out of it. It's going to take them out of it if they lose this game. So it's a must-win for USC to keep the playoff hopes alive. Trojans are favored at home, -5.5 points, over under 64.5 in this one. I'll let you make the pick first, my friend. Where do you want to go here?
This is a really tough one. USC cannot lose this game. The defense is not very good. But they're going up against a Notre Dame offense that is good in all the weird ways possible. And it's not in like they have a good quarterback. Like, Drew Pine's fine, but like, he doesn't light it up, right? He's like a 17-20 attempt guy. He throws for 140 yards, and he's fine. So that makes me want to lock it. But I'm not going to. I'm going to take USC. I'm not going to lock it. I may regret not locking that one, but I'm going to take USC at -5.5, and I'm going to take the over in this one as well. I'm going to take the over at set it right now at 64.5. I think that we'll see some points put up in this game, but damn, I really hope I don't regret locking that one, because that would have been a hell of a lock.
Yeah, this is a tough one, and I'm very tempted to lock it, but I vowed to stay away from the Pac-12. So even though this isn't a Pac-12 matchup, I'm just going to stay away from the lock. So I'm rolling with the Trojans as well. Notre Dame's got a solid defense, an okay offense, but this USC attack, Lincoln Riley, Caleb Williams, Jordan Addison, too much. Too much for a lot of teams. Too much for the Fighting Irish on Saturday. We'll go USC. Mitch, Pac-12 matchup of the week. Number 9, Oregon, with a chance at the Pac-12 championship game on the line, headed up to Corvallis to take on number 21, Oregon State. The Ducks favored on the road, -3, over under 58. This is a tough one, Mitch, because as I said, headed into that Utah game, there's questions about Bo Nix. Would he play? Would he not? Ty Thompson expected to start, and then Bo Nix comes out, he plays, he was clearly hobbled, but they were able to get a win over the Utes. Can they replicate that formula this week against a good Oregon State team, an Oregon State team that has a very solid defense? It's going to be able to give this Oregon offense fits and really challenge them, and with a not fully healthy Bo Nix, you know, can they withstand that? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say we get Trojans Ducks in Vegas for the Pac-12 championship game. So I'm going to roll with Oregon in this one. And as I said, no lock for me, because I got to stay away from the Pac-12. It's done me wrong too many times.
You know, there's been a lot of question marks about Utah's secondary and, you know, throughout the course of the year. I think that this Oregon State game is a bigger test for Oregon than the Utah game was.
I agree.
If Bo Nix is not 100% healthy, they're going to run into some issues. So for that reason, I'm taking Oregon, but I'm not locking it. And this was a really tempting line to take, but, there's not enough substance there behind it for me to think that Oregon can just pull this one out easily and cover by a score. So I'm going to take Oregon, but no lock here from me. And I'm you know what? I'm gonna take the under in an Oregon game, which is weird. I'm gonna take an under in an Oregon.
Yeah, over under 58 points. I'd say under as well on this one because again, Oregon State very solid defense. We saw a 20-17 game against between Oregon and Utah last week, so I'd expect a similar-ish result, you know, in this one. So yeah, I'd say under as well. Mitch, our Group of Five matchup. This is a good one. Number 19 Tulane at number 24 Cincinnati. Again, this an opportunity to clinch a spot in the American Athletic Conference Championship. Now, UCF still has to win their game this week. So this, if UCF wins, they'll be in and they'll face the winner of this game. But, you know, the Knights lose, then we'll see a repeat next week of this exact same matchup in the championship game. But Tulane at Cincinnati, Bearcats favored -2 at home, over under 46.5 in this one, Mitch. You've got the pick here first, my friend.
I hate that I'm first here.
Friday morning game. Black Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific time on ABC. That's a... So wake up after the day after Thanksgiving with some good old Group of Five football, you know?
Get yourself a pot of coffee. Maybe heat up some of those leftovers at halftime.
Hey, yes.
Yeah, you know, it'll be a good time over there. Look, this is a game that... I'm struggling between these last two games. I'm really struggling. I'm gonna lock Tulane at +2.
Okay.
I'm gonna lock Tulane at +2. I'm not gonna touch the over under. I don't even want to think about it. I just want to worry about the spread. I don't want to worry about over unders. Just let me focus on Tulane winning by more than 2 points. So for that reason, and Cincinnati's such a tough place to play on the road. But I think Tulane can get it done. I think that this is this is a tough one, but give it to me.
All right, Mitch. This is a very tough matchup. Two very evenly, I think an even matchup between these two squads. Good offensive, solid defenses. Who wins? I'm going to go with the home team here. I'm going to go with the future Big 12. Give me Cincinnati, and I'm going to lock Cincinnati here.
This is the first time.
I'm putting the pressure on this game where we've locked opposing teams. So this week is going to come down to this matchup right here on our picks. But I am locking Cincinnati -2. That's a great line to lock because, you know, -2 is comfy, right? Like we just got to get, you know, field goal win. You know, we're that's a good spot to be in. I'm not going to be sweating that too much as long as we get the win, but this should be a fun one. This should be a good one.
It's like a comfy chair. You just hope you don't get too comfy so you're able to get up afterwards. That's what scares me about that. And like, I'd rather like be a little bit uncomfortable like in USC -5.5, but yeah, this one's...
You took the underdog, Tulane. There you go.
Well, and you know what? This is the first time we've locked the same game all year, so...
True.
We'll have a little extra skin in the game for this one as well, so...
Absolutely, Mitch, and that leaves us with our final matchup, the best matchup of the week, number 3, Michigan at number 2, Ohio State. Buckeyes favored -7.5 at home. Over under 56, and this is the reason why I locked Cincinnati, Mitch, because I'm rolling with the Buckeyes. I'm not on the same page as you. I believe Ohio State's better than Michigan. I think you've said Michigan's better than Ohio State this year. You felt that way. I think I'd give the slight edge to Ohio State. So I want to roll with the Buckeyes in this one, but I did not want to say -7.5 victory because this is going to be a much closer game than that. Probably coming down to a field goal within a score, certainly not 8 point plus. So did not want to lock this by any means for Ohio State, but I do want to pick the Buckeyes. So I will roll with Ohio State in this one.
Yeah. I had to take a step back and take a look at myself. Men are prideful by nature, and I almost let my pride get in my way of how much I think Michigan is better than Ohio State. And I really wanted to lock Michigan +7.5. Like I just wanted to go put my nuts out on the table and go Michigan -7.5. Let's go. I'm taking Michigan. I am taking Michigan in this game. I still think that they, in hindsight, it's probably a good idea that I just tucked them back in my pants and didn't
that
do
we
this.
We both avoided this game because that's just not going to go well for either of us.
But yeah, this is a big one. This is a huge, huge game. Massive implications on the line here. I just think Michigan has the slightly more impressive resume, and for that reason, they beat better opponents, and I think I'm going to take them here.
Yeah, I like it. Should be a great matchup. Toss-up in my mind, honestly. I think these two teams are really competitive, so.
Give me the khakis! Let's go!
Should be a good one. So I don't know if you've seen this on TikTok, because you're on TikTok, but I don't know if you came across this summer. His daughter, Jim Harbaugh's daughter, coach of Michigan, is active on TikTok, and when they went on family vacation, she would just take videos of her dad and post all the weird stuff he would do, like doing push-ups in the airport and stuff, you know, and stuff like that. And I'm like, I love Jim Harbaugh. I don't care, like, I'm not talking about the coach. I just like the personality, the weird human that is. Love that. That was fantastic content.
He seems like he's a total dad. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, he does the weird things that you're like, if you saw your dad do, like, at that age, you'd be like, Dad, what are you doing? Like, stop doing that.
Yep.
But, like, and now we think it's awesome. But, you know, it's...
Right.
It's, yeah. That was some TikTok gold, that's for sure.
Those are too funny. All right, Mitch, wrap up the campus tour. We got a player to know before the NFL draft. And to recap the names that we've heard so far, starting with last week, Tyree Wilson, edge out of Texas Tech, who, by the way, declared for... the draft, so he's officially going this time around. So good to see that there for Wilson. Quentin Johnston, wide receiver out of TCU. Olufoshinu, tackle, Penn State. Hendon Hooker, quarterback, Tennessee. Michael Mayer, tight end, Notre Dame. Joey Porter Jr., cornerback, Penn State. Drew Sanders, linebacker, Arkansas. Bijan Robinson, running back, Texas. Jordan Addison, wide receiver, USC. And Bryce Young, quarterback, Alabama. 10 names on the list, Mitch. And I thought it was time to bring up this guy. He's been in the works for a minute. I've already shared some of my thoughts on him, but it is time to have the conversation about Will Levis, quarterback out of Kentucky. Because I believe that the draft community and those that are propping up Will Levis in this quarterback draft class and this conversation around the best quarterbacks in this upcoming draft, I believe that the conversation around Will Levis is disingenuous. I think we are not having the right conversation around Will Levis. There is too much conversation around Will Levis and associating with him, with Josh Allen, than I'm comfortable with. It just, frankly, I believe is off base. And I get it. Listen, Will Levis, extremely toolsy player. He's got physically, athletically, all the things you'd want to see. 6'3", 230, big arm, athletic, not like running, not a run threat like that, but athletic in the way that a Josh Allen is athletic, can make plays happen. Extend plays that so valuable that you see, but much like Josh Allen, and why people want to drive that comparison home is that he hasn't been productive in college. Mitch, he hasn't been good at times in college. Heavy turnovers this year, 17 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. And why I believe this is disingenuous, Mitch, is because Josh Allen was playing for freaking Wyoming in the Mountain West Conference. He was a junior college quarterback before even being able to get to Wyoming for an opportunity to compete. Like, the path that Josh Allen took to become him, it was clear he was raw as raw could be. And he wasn't playing at the highest levels. But what he could be, you saw the vision. What we have with Will Levis, Mitch, is more akin to Daniel Jones than it is to Josh Allen. And that is where I think we need to be having this conversation. Because if you will remember the year that Daniel Jones came out, he was a toolsy quarterback coming out of the ACC. Duke, not great competition, not great skill players around him. He wasn't playing in Alabama with NFL wide receivers. He wasn't playing behind an offensive line full of NFL, you know, linemen. He wasn't playing on a team like that. And his numbers were sus. He had high turnovers, but you saw the tools. You saw the athletic ability. And then he showed off at the combine setting. And Daniel Jones went from a late first round pick to a surprise pick in the top 10. And I believe that Will Levis is much closer to the late first round grade than anything near the top five conversation that we're having now. And guys like Mike Renner at PFF have been high on Levis for forever. He hasn't still. He just updated his big board yesterday on November 21st. He has Will Levis as the number three player on his big board behind only Bryce Young and Will Anderson. And I just don't, I believe it is disingenuous to pretend like he is anywhere close to that level. He is not. Will Levis is a project. He is more akin to a Daniel Jones project than Josh Allen. He plays at Kentucky, Mitch. He plays in the SEC with talent around him. Okay, he's not at Wyoming. These are talented guys around him. He's got a coaching staff that can prepare him for the next level in the right ways. And he's not succeeding the way that he should be. I know he's carrying this team. This Kentucky team's been a disappointment, 6-5. They've had some injuries. They've had some, you know, woes, but they should be better if he is this bet. If he's that guy. If he's that guy, he should be better. The talent around him warrants that, and he's not producing. So when are we going to have the conversation, right? When are we going to stop pretending that every toolsy quarterback that comes out of college can be Josh Allen? Let's be honest with ourselves and call Will Levis what he is, a late first-round quarterback who has the tools to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league if it works. But as we've seen with Josh Allen, as we've seen with Daniel Jones, situation matters. Right? Getting with the right people, with the right talent around you matters. Where he ends up on that scale, I don't know, but I am just, besides the Mayo thing, Mitch, because listen, Mayo in the coffee, automatic red flag, I'm out on Will Levis. I was out the minute I heard that. But apart from that, as a comical thing, I really do believe Will Levis is a first-round quarterback, but he is a late first-round quarterback. It should be Stroud and Young at the top, then a gap. Then we can have a conversation with Will Levis around the 15-20 range, you know, when we get there in April. But it's been a hard thing for me to see all season, and I've been waiting for everyone to come around as the performance hasn't stacked up for him. But it seems like, if anything, people have doubled down on this take, and I just don't understand it.
Well, yeah, and if you want the numbers, we can look at the numbers. His splits between unranked opponents and top tier opponents, which would be top 25 ranked teams, 956 yards this year, 5 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He's struggled against the best talent in the country. And yep, you're going to go to the NFL where the best players in the world are. And, you know, you may be like, you use the word toolsy. You may have all the right tools and attributes, but they're just not polished. They're not polished. They're not there yet. And Will Levis may be one of those guys that maybe he's not a starter till he's 27, 28 years old. That's fine. That's fine. You can be a late bloomer and still be a successful NFL quarterback. But where he's at right now, he shows that he just does not match up well against the best talent in the country that he's going to face. So I'm 100% on board with you. I don't even know if he's a first round talent right now. I would not even touch him until the second round if I were a team drafting him. I think there's too many other talented players that could be taken ahead of him. I know how important the quarterback position is.
Right.
And that's probably where he gets his boost from. But like a project quarterback, I don't want to touch in the first round. I don't want to touch. I want to take in the second or the third, you know, not the third. He won't be a third round pick, but I don't want to take a project quarterback in the first round.
Yeah. Unless the situation is right, unless you have a Mahomes-esque situation where you have a starter in place. And I did see one mock draft earlier this week where he was taken at the number 9 pick to the Detroit Lions with their second first round pick. And the idea was, hey, you've got Goff under contract for another year. If you play Goff next year, because he's not ready to be your guy, you're in an okay situation.
Makes sense.
Will Levis out there with expectations because you're the Houston Texans or you're the Carolina Panthers or you're whoever who needs their quarterback, their franchise quarterback, and you throw Will Levis out there and you took him in the top three and he's got to be your guy day one next year, you're in a bad spot. So I we're going to see him rise and he may go top five and I'm going to be pushing back the whole time. If I change my tune on it, we'll get there, but I cannot see it. I haven't seen it. I cannot see it. I'm going to stay that way. That's the player to know before the draft this week. Will Levis, quarterback out of Kentucky. He puts mayo in his coffee, people. That's enough. That's enough for me.
Enough. Yep.
I was out when I heard that.
That makes him like a fourth round pick, so you know.
Really? Undraftable, honestly.
Undraftable.
Mitch, that's going to do it for the Campus Tour. It's going to do it for the first half of the podcast. We're going to take a break and hit a mid-roll. When we come back, we'll do our Week 11 NFL recap and our quick picks for Week 12. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for?
Welcome back into the second half of the Sports Hour. With Mitch Bowen Dallin. Thanks for sticking around through the break. We're going to get into some NFL on this back half. Dallin, we got some NFL superlatives once again for our Week 11 recap. I think becoming a quick favorite here of the podcast. A great way for us to really break down in a succinct, precise way of our feelings of kind of the biggest things that we noticed throughout the week of football.
Absolutely. Yeah, we love to do it. And let's start with the most impressive team from last week. And I'll go first here with the first game from last week, Thursday night, where the Tennessee Titans earned a win over the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau. And man, I chose Tennessee for my most impressive team this week as they improved to 7-3. And it's not because, you know, the Packers are world beaters or, you know, anything like that. It's just that this Titans team just continues to get W's. They just find ways to win, and they have under Mike Vrabel for the last couple seasons. Whether there was no Tannehill, whether there was no Derrick Henry, it hasn't mattered. They've continued to win. Then they traded away A.J. Brown. I mean, their offensive personnel at the pass-catching position is just a mess, and they're 7-3. It hasn't slowed them down at all. And I think that's extremely impressive. And when it comes to the playoffs and, you know, who's going to be there, who's earning that spot, it just almost feels like at this point with Mike Vrabel there, you got to pencil Tennessee in at the end. Like, they're just going to find a way to get there.
You know, I think over the last few years, it's been really clear to us why Tennessee was winning ball games. And it was the dominance of Derrick Henry, right? Mike Vrabel's done a great job at the helm, but it was really Derrick Henry that was like the clear giveaway of why they're winning ball games, why they're staying at ball games, dominating on the ground, not just establishing a ground game, dominating a ground game and playing good defense and keeping themselves in ball games. While Derrick Henry's had a good year, don't be wrong, he's had a great year. They're finding different ways to get it done. And this team is a team that both you and I were not very high on going into the year. We thought that this was the year that we see them kind of fall off the cliff, and yeah, that hasn't been the case. They're 7-3. They're still winning ball games. Granted, the Packers are not a good ball club right now, but to get a win like that in Lambeau in November is a very big deal. So I love giving the big ups to the Tennessee Titans for having a really, really impressive road win in Lambeau.
Yeah, and again, the defense plays solid. The offense does enough. Ryan Tannehill does enough, right? And they just find ways to get it done. So you're going to see them in the playoffs. They're going to be there. Like, whether they can make a run or not, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think they're built for that. but they're certainly built for regular season success and winning games and getting to the postseason, and they, it looks like they're going to do it again.
Well, and Ryan Tannehill, you mentioned him doing enough. Really, the Packers defense, who has been streaky throughout the course of the year, but they had one thing consistent, and that was the pass defense that actually played fairly decent. Ryan Tannehill went 22 for 27, 333 and 2. Like, that's taking advantage. That's taking advantage of it. So, a fantastic week for Ryan Tannehill. And I think you're right. We should just start penciling in the Titans right now as long as Mike Vrabel's at the helm.
Yeah.
And they have this combination.
Like, Mitch, who was your most impressive team from this past week?
Look, I think that this was such a fun game to watch. You know, even though the score may not indicate that, but the San Francisco 49ers are my most impressive team of the week. Look, they're 6-4. Their record doesn't really reflect how good this team is. This team could easily be 8-2 or 9-1, I think. I mean, this is a really, really good team. Jimmy Garoppolo, 20 for 29 and 4 touchdowns against the Cardinal defense. Again, using a plethora of running backs to get the job done. That's a Kyle Shanahan signature. Christian McCaffrey, his addition to this football team has really helped this Niners offense turn the corner as far as what they're able to do and become multidimensional. We all knew that Deebo Samuel was going to be a guy that is going to be a Swiss Army knife for him. But now when you have two guys that can do that, it just makes you that much more potent. This is a team that, quite honestly, should be in serious consideration for, you know, being the NFC representative in the Super Bowl at this point. I think they were super impressive. They've been super impressive since McCaffrey came over, and their utter domination over Arizona and Mexico City on Monday night was just more proof of that.
Yeah, you know, health has been the curse for the San Francisco team since that Super Bowl run a few years ago, and it has not been lack of talent or lack of trying. And it's good to see them healthy and playing at this level. It's a reminder of just how dangerous this team can be when they're assembled in that way. Can they sustain that? We'll see. This defense is certainly one of the best in the league. It continues to prove that. It's all going to be on the offense. It's all going to be on Jimmy Garoppolo at the quarterback position. Can he do enough? He was excellent on Monday night. Exactly what they need him to do. If he can continue to do that, they've got enough weapons around him. If he can find them, they'll score some points. So, yeah, certainly this Niners team is looks like they're coming into form in the right time of the season. NFC West still up for grabs for them. So, you know, they should be the favorite to win that, you know, at least at this point.
I mean, you mentioned the health, and I would be remiss if I didn't do this, but knock on wood, because – we know how much right. We know how much the health can really hurt this team. They're healthy. Let's keep them healthy. And I'll tell you what, right now, the way this defense is playing, if DeMeco Ryans is not one of the leading head coach candidates going into the offseason to fill one of these vacancies that we think are going to be, you know, one of the multiple vacancies we think they're going to be, it'll be a tragedy, because he has done a fantastic job with that defense and deserves the opportunity to help turn around a franchise maybe in need of a solid head coach.
Yeah, well, you know, I want him in Carolina. So if it was up to me, it wouldn't be. I wouldn't even interview anyone else. I might just give him straight the job, call it good. But Mitch, most disappointing team of the week. I'll go first here. And I chose a team that did get a win, but it has been a disappointing stretch of 2 weeks for the Philadelphia Eagles, who had to score two touchdowns in the fourth quarter in some late game heroics to pull off the 17-16 win over the Jeff Saturday coached Indianapolis Colts on the road. Again, 17-16 victory. They're down 13-3 late in this one in the third quarter before they're able to score early in the fourth. I think what concerns me most is that this was not the performance that you wanted to see from the Eagles after the loss. The loss to the Commanders a week ago, that's fine. You're going to lose some games. You're not going to go undefeated the whole season. Commanders, yeah, they're a tough team. They're not an easy out, clearly. And so, you know, that's okay. But we both expected them to bounce back this week and look good doing it. And they looked really bad again. And they got a win, But it wasn't impressive, and it doesn't make you feel any better about the issues we saw in the loss the past week. And this offense now feels like it's stalling out in a very weird way, and it makes me worry about what comes next for this Philadelphia Eagles team, because despite the hot start, they're no lock in their division. You know, Cowboys and the Giants each have 7 wins. So, you know, Eagles are certainly not out of this despite this win. And I'm concerned that we might see maybe I'm not calling it Cardinals second half collapse like we saw last year, but part of me fears that we're going to come down to earth in a big way here. And I hope not. I hope that we can get back to the Eagles that we saw at the beginning of the season.
I fear that this is a more Cowboy-esque collapse where we still see them win games and maybe not in impressive fashion, but they get into the playoffs as an 11-12 win team, and then something just, you know, it's just something atrocious happens in the wild card round or the divisional round, and we don't see them move on. But I'm not worried about the Eagles. I'm not worried about them. Okay. I think that they've had a rough 2 weeks. And for a team that started off so hot, I mean, were we expecting them to go 18-0? No. These weeks were going to happen. They just happened to come 2 weeks in a row. So I'm not worried about the Eagles. I think they'll be fine. They'll iron it out. I do, though, before we move on to my disappointing team, want to give a quick props to Jeff Saturday. Though he has a loss here now on his record, 1-1 officially as a head coach in the NFL, there has been a very serious and drastic culture change, I feel like, in that Colts organization since he came on. This team feels like they have a different energy about them, and not so, you know, hopeless. The team doesn't seem hopeless anymore. While Jeff Saturday may not have the experience of a head coach of every other head coach in the NFL, every other head coach in history, there seems to be a serious culture shift and change that is proven to be for the better for the Colts. So this is actually a good loss for them. I would say this is a really good loss for them. Only losing by one to a Super Bowl contending Eagles team.
Mitch, who was your biggest disappointment this week?
Man, it's gotta be the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, this was ugly, and it got ugly quick. 40-3 to the Vikings. It makes me wonder if this was the fakest 8-1 team we've ever seen. They didn't play a necessarily tough schedule to start the year, right? They play in the AFC North. How tough could it possibly be? They get matched up against the Dallas Cowboys team, which we know is good. We know they're very good. And it was complete, total domination from the word go. I'm really questioning whether the Vikings, I think that the Vikings still have this division locked. I question whether they can actually make something with that division when it comes playoff time.
Yeah. Mitch, statistically, the numbers say that the Vikings are the worst 8-2 football team we've ever seen in the history of the NFL. No other team has gotten to 8-2 with a negative scoring margin.
Yeah.
But the Vikings have been outscored this season by their opponents, and they're 8-2. So you're the first team ever to do that in history. You are the worst 8-2 team we've ever seen. And I think that was the worry after this, is it's such an impressive win against the Bills. Such an impressive win. Oh, game of the year, right? And we see that great ending, and you think, wow, is this Minnesota team legit? And then they put up the dud of all duds against a good Cowboys team. And now it's like you're questioning everything you knew about them. You're like, are they even good at all? Or are they just a fraud? It is amazing how quickly that can turn around. I do think part of that is that this Cowboys team is pretty good. And the let off, after the big win last week against Buffalo, riding high off of that, the combination of those things is this deadly case here. But you certainly need Minnesota to bounce back in a quick way to be convinced here, because I'm with you. Like, I mean, the division's going to be easy for them. I think they have a 4-game lead still over the Lions. Like, I mean, they're well on their way to winning the NFC North, but are they going to win a playoff game? I mean, at this point, it's tough After that loss, it's hard to, you know, makes you wonder.
And here's what's so confusing about them is it's like, I think it's hard to pinpoint where the problem is. Like, it's like one unit shows up in the next, you know, and one doesn't. And the next week, it's the exact opposite. It's just is hard to pinpoint what the Vikings really are. And I think it's just two streaky units where it's hard to get them both on the same week.
Yeah, absolutely. Mitch, overreaction for the week. I'll go first here because it has to do with that Cowboys-Vikings game. Based on all that I saw this week and my general feelings, I think my overreaction this week is that the Dallas Cowboys should be the favorite out of the NFC. I think with the Eagles' performances these last couple weeks and the Cowboys 7-3 record this season and how they've looked with Dak Prescott back. I mean, how they looked with Cooper Rush. I mean, winning games with Cooper Rush was extremely impressive. Three losses on the season come to the Buccaneers, the Eagles, and at the Green Bay Packers 2 weeks ago by 3 points. So no bad losses, close losses, good teams that they've lost to for the most part. And they're beating some good teams in dominant fashion. This is a defense we know has a lot of star power and talent, could really show out. This is an offense that we know, you know, isn't as good and potent as maybe years past. But, man, Tony Pollard and Zeke are turning out to be a great tandem there. And, you know, we're coming on to something there. And we're getting Tyron Smith back, the tackle, this week. So the offensive line is going to improve for Dallas. And I don't know. I see Philadelphia trending down. I see Minnesota trending down. And I wonder who's left in the NFC. Who is left in the NFC after those two teams that you feel great about? And I think it's Dallas. So my overreaction this week, and yes, it is overreaction. My overreaction is that Dallas should be the favorite in the NFC.
I don't think that's an overreaction. I just don't buy it. Like, you said all the right things there to why.
I left out a very key part, and that is that Mike McCarthy is the head coach, okay? So, like,
that's very important. But I don't disagree with you. I do disagree with you. I think that, you know, the Eagles are not trending down. I think they've had two bad weeks. I think that the San Francisco 49ers are trending in a very steep upward way.
Yep.
So I'm not saying that's an overreaction because they very well could be the favorite, you know, given 2 weeks time, I could completely change my tune. I'm just not buying it because I've seen so much talent out of the Eagles, out of the Niners, the confusingness of the Vikings. Like we just talked about them being the favorite, but we just talked about how confusing the Vikings were and how they're outscored by their opponents over the course of the year. And they're an 8-2 team. So really, how impressive of a win is that? So, it's not an overreaction. I'm just not buying it quite yet. But I get what you're coming from. Absolutely.
I think the sentiment comes to, you know, coming into the season, we very much felt like the NFC felt very wide open. It wasn't really clear who the really good teams were going to be or who were going to be the true contenders, right? So, you know, we thought Philly, I had LA, you know, we thought some of the same suspects, Packers, Bucks would be there. And we had some teams emerge early, but I sit at this point of the season still not convinced by anyone really other than Philadelphia until the last couple weeks. And I think this Dallas team in San Francisco, if they could still stay healthy and Jimmy's playing well, but even that at this point still feels up in the air because, you know, we haven't seen it from them. So yeah, a weird spot for the NFC, but yeah, that's my thoughts. Mitch, what was your overreaction for this week?
Two AFC West coaches will not return as head coach next year.
Oh, Andy Reid retiring, huh?
I mean, that's a possibility. I don't see that happening. I think it's very clear that there's the two, right? Josh McDaniels, Nathaniel Hackett. I think that those are that clearly the two on the chopping block. I'm going to throw Brandon Staley in the mix as well, though, too. Mm-hmm. Loser of their last two. They're 5-5. This is a team for the last 3 years. People have been talking about Super Bowl contenders. They may represent the AFC. Like, this is a great team, and they've just never been able to completely put it together. Now, I know that one of those years was with Anthony Lynn, and that went in a way where Anthony Lynn wound up getting fired. And it's Brandon Staley has stepped in and they haven't really done much. And like I said this a few weeks ago, you have to start to wonder, is Brandon Staley going to be the guy in San Diego to get that job done? And I'm not really convinced that he is. So, look, I think that two coaches lose their job in the AFC West, and it could be either one of Josh McDaniels, Nathaniel Hackett, and or Brandon Staley.
Yeah, I think the Staley thing is warranted, Mitch. One, I love that you called them San Diego. Just
Oh, damn it!
It's great. It's great. We all know. It's I love it. I think it's warranted, Mitch, because this Chargers team has expectations, and rightfully so. You have Justin Herbert, who is in the most valuable part of his career when he costs the least amount that he'll ever cost at the position, and you're allowed to put as much around him as he can, and you're not taking advantage of it. And as you said, you know, Anthony Lynn was the head coach the first year, but they went 7-9. And last year you brought in Brandon Staley, you went 9-8 and you missed the playoffs. If they miss the playoffs again this year, Mitch, I know Staley's only been there 2 years, but it's going to be hard to convince people that, you know, we feel confident in bringing him back. I mean, at a certain point, you have to see results, and Justin Herbert is not going to get any cheaper anytime soon. So the clock is ticking.
It's the Marty Schottenheimer effect. You know he's a good coach. Like, I think that Brandon Staley is a good coach, just like Marty Schottenheimer was. But success down the stretch is just not there for them. And, you know, I can't be convinced. Just like I couldn't be convinced ever that Marty Schottenheimer was ever going to be the guy, I couldn't be convinced now that Brandon Staley's ever going to be the guy. So, not ever. That's a little bit extreme. But right now in this situation in Los Angeles, not having it. Yep. Not having it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think that's an overreaction. I do think two coaches will be gone, and it definitely one of them could be Brandon Staley. Absolutely. Mitch, our MVPs of the week. I got to give mine to the swag daddy himself, Jamal Williams, the running back for the Detroit Lions. 3 rushing touchdowns in that game, Mitch. And I got to ask you, who do you think leads the NFL in rushing touchdowns this year?
Hmm.
A lot of great running backs in the league. Who do you think leads them all?
Well, it couldn't be Jamal Williams, could it?
Of course, because I set up the question for you. Yes. It is Jamal Williams, Mitch. 12 rushing touchdowns on the season. That's more than the 11 for Nick Chubb. That's more than the 10 for Derrick Henry. Jalen Hurts is next there with 8. It's Jamal Williams, who's supposed to be the backup running back in Detroit. He's got 668 yards on the ground. And again, 12 touchdowns. So, I mean, 3 touchdowns in the game. The fact he's leading the league in rushing touchdowns, I thought, you know, we got to give Jamal some love here. He's great, and good to see a big week from him.
This is fun. It's fun. I don't know if we've learned anything about these goal line touch type guys, right? Because that's where Jamal Williams is at.
Yep.
Do not produce the next Mike Gillisley. If you remember Mike Gillisley in New England, he was a touchdown vulture, right? Big touchdown numbers, 2 years in New England. Just tried to be made the lead back there, and it didn't work out. It's okay to have your quick, shifty guy, which would be DeAndre Swift in this example, and have your goal line guy in Jamal Williams. It's okay to do that. Just don't try to turn him into a lead back. I'm not saying that the Lions will. But he did take 17 touches this last week to DeAndre Swift's 5. So he's had a fantastic year, and he's proven himself to be a true short yardage, get the first down, get a touchdown, get 3 yards in a cloud of dust type guy. And it's kind of on brand for this Lions offense right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Very reminiscent of, like, I always think of, like, LeGarrette Blount, you know, he had that role where it was like, he's only getting 120 touches this year, but he's going to score 10 touchdowns because he's only getting goal line work. And he did such a great job at that. Mitch, who was your MVP for this week?
This week, I'm going to give it to Samaje Perine. He stepped in filling in for the injured Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon went down early with a concussion. Samaje was only 11 for 30 on the ground, so nothing too impressive, but it was the receiving work that he put in that was really impressive. 4 for 52 with 3 touchdowns. The guy just filled in and did exactly what he needed to do. They didn't ask him to be a bell cow. They didn't ask him to be a 3-down guy once Mixon went down. step in, know your role, do your job. And I think the Bengals, credit to the Bengals offense and their offensive coordinator for orchestrating that around the loss of Mixon and utilizing Smaje in a way that he thrives, which is not necessarily being a bell cow, carry the ball, you know, twice every four plays, but put him in a position to succeed. And he did exactly that with his 3-touchdown day.
Yeah. No Jamar Chase right now for the Bengals either. So certainly when you miss in Mixon and Chase, you're not feeling great, but offense continue to hum and Bengals seem like they're coming into their own in a good way, even though they're not healthy. It makes you feel good about when they get those weapons back, what this offense could look like down the stretch. Mitch, our big L of the week, and I want to go first here with mine, and there's been a lot of conversation around this player, and some of it is warranted, and some of it is not. Zach Wilson is the big L for me this week. Jets lose to the Patriots 10-3. It was an opportunity for Zach and the Jets to bounce back. They lost a couple weeks ago to New England. Zach threw like 3 picks, really awful game for him, worst of the season. And there's a chance for them to sort of right the ship and get things going. And they didn't. Zach was 9-22, 77 yards, sacked 4 times. And they mustered a field goal. And a lot of the backlash I've seen for Zach comes from his comments after the game. He was asked, do you feel like you owe, essentially, do you owe an apology to your defense, or do you feel like you should say something to your defense for the fact that you weren't able to, you know, put up enough points for them? They played great. They only gave up, you know, so many. And his answer was a quick and short no. And, that wasn't perceived well by people, and understandably, not the appropriate way to answer that question. You need to own a little bit of it, even in that moment, even to the media. It you know, you got to play the game, but Zach didn't. And people took advantage and taking advantage of this opportunity to write him off, call him a bust, say it's over, say it's out. He was always a bust and never believed, yada, yada, what it is. Robert Saleh came out, I think today, it's Tuesday, maybe it was Monday, saying, you know, we're not committed to Zach this week as a starter per se. There's a question. He has to earn his spot. And all of that is fair. But what I do think is unfair, Mitch, is this narrative around Zach that has resurfaced this week after, as a result of this loss and some of those post-game comments of him being a spoiled brat, essentially, being not a good person, not a good teammate, you know, accusations. He comes from money and therefore doesn't take responsibility. A lot of things like that thrown out there. And as somebody who covered him at BYU for his entire collegiate career, and listen, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know Zach Wilson personally or I know members of his family personally or anything like that, but I've been around this program. I've heard a lot of things about him and a lot of things about different players. Things that aren't said on the record. I've never heard anything bad as it comes to Zach Wilson and his character, the way that he treats his teammates. He was a captain at BYU. He's a captain at the New York Jets. None of his teammates had anything bad to say about him after this week. None of his teammates had any issue with him and his response to the media or anything like that. So I just find it strange that we take these opportunities in the middle of the season to run victory laps around each other over players who have bad performances 1 week to the next. When in the end, like this game has only so much context in the whole half, in the whole course of this season. And whether the Jets believe Zach Wilson is their future quarterback or not is not based on this week 11 loss to the Patriots. It's not. It won't be. There's a lot of season left. And the rest of these games are going to determine how they feel about Zach Wilson. If they make the playoffs, will determine how they feel about Zach Wilson. What they see in the building day to day determines how they feel about Zach Wilson. Not some comments made to the media, not some accusations from sources that say he's a bad teammate or say this and that. Like, those things don't matter. And I find it funny in the course of the NFL seasons, again, and we do these with all different kinds of players, teams, we get caught up, we like to run victory laps week by week. None of this matters week by week. You know, this game is just in the context of the season, not good, bad loss. He deserves the L, but if you want to write him off because of this, I'm just saying go ahead, but that's just not how this works.
I think Zach Wilson is a very talented quarterback, and I'm not going to write him off and say that he's a bust and that he's always been a bust and that he's not talented and thing. And I don't know Zach Wilson personally either. Like, clearly I don't, you know, but when it comes to the comments of he's not being a good teammate right now, and like you said, none of his teammates have said that. And I think that his teammates are making the right choice and keeping that non-inflammatory, even if they feel sure. a different way than if what they're actually saying. Right.
Exactly.
You're a quarterback of the New York Jets. You're a quarterback in the biggest sports market in America. Aside from all that, you're also a quarterback. You're a leader of this team, and you need to step up and take the blame. In this situation, as a quarterback in the NFL, it is always imperative that you take blame and not accept credit.
Yep.
And Zach Wilson did not do that. That shows a lack of maturity to me, that maybe he's not ready for the bright lights, and that maybe he needs to take a step back and sit down. I'm not saying that. And so that makes Robert Saleh's comments about we're not committed to Zach as the starter this week even more imperative, and maybe rolling with Joe Flacco instead. You're a quarterback of a football team. If there was any other quarterback in the NFL right now, I guarantee a lot of them would say, yeah, no, I need to play better. I didn't help my defense out today. My defense gave up 10. I couldn't do anything. I need to step up and play better. It's that simple to come up and say. Yep. And Zach Wilson didn't do that. And you're absolutely right. He deserves the L here because he showed a lack of maturity and he showed a lack of leadership. And it makes me question. It shows that he lacks certain leadership qualities, especially being a quarterback at the NFL level.
Fair enough. Okay, Mitch, your big L of the week.
The air raid offense. It is time for Cliff Kingsbury to finally get out of Arizona. The time is over. It's not working. You have conflicts with your quarterback. You can't score. You can't do anything productive offensively, even when you add a top tier wide receiver talent like DeAndre Hopkins, who would fit perfectly into this offensive scheme. And granted, he's getting the receptions and the yards, and that's fine, but you're showing an inability to score. You're not utilizing your run game correctly. The air raid offense just does not work at the NFL level the way that Cliff Kingsbury wants it to. And quite honestly, if Cliff Kingsbury could be one of those guys that is gone at the end of the year.
Yeah, well, if you didn't get it, like the contract extension and all that stuff, I would think so. And that's what makes me wonder, would they move on from him after just extending him so recently? But the performance certainly warrants it because it's successful. This season, and it hasn't been successful at all in Arizona other than like the 6-0 start last year, right? I mean, after that, besides that like brief point of last season, it just has been underwhelming in Arizona as a whole with him and Kyler Murray. So I certainly think that change is needed there in Arizona. We'll see if they actually make that move in the offseason if it does continue at this pace for Arizona.
If I'm the Arizona Cardinals, I'm saying screw the contract extension. You still suck. You couldn't figure it out. Yeah. It's time to go. It's time to go.
Absolutely. Mitch, let's ramp. That'll do it for our Week 11 recap. We got to do our quick picks for Week 12 in the NFL to wrap up the podcast. And to look back at last week, Mitch, you went 8-6 on the week. I went 6-8. So, Mitch, increasing the lead here, 93-72-1 on the season. I am 85-80-1, so 8 games back. So more competition ahead, and should be a good one.
All right. Yeah, Dallin, lots of big games this week, and let's get right into them. It's Thanksgiving football, baby. Thanksgiving football, and we're going to kick off that Thursday day slate with the Buffalo Bills. They are leaving upstate New York to take on the Motor City Monsters, the Detroit Lions. Give me the Buffalo Bills in this one. Great stretch of wins for the Detroit Lions, but this is a tough Buffalo team looking to continue to win ball games, take control of that AFC East. I like Buffalo in this one.
Yeah, Buffalo did not play in the snowpocalypse last week. They played that game in Detroit at Ford Field. flew back to Buffalo, will fly back to Detroit to play this Thursday game. But I'm taking the Lions on Thanksgiving to get the win over the Bills. This Lions team, the Fighting Dan Campbells, they've been competitive. They've been sneaky, you know, kind of a sleepy win last week for the Bills. Lions shock the world, get the win on Thanksgiving at home. Give me Detroit, Mitch.
That'll give Detroit something to be thankful for on Thanksgiving. My God.
Absolutely. Following that NFC East matchup, the New York Giants are headed to Jerry World to take on the Dallas Cowboys, matchup of 7-3 NFC East squads. Give me the Cowboys in this one at home. I believe in the Cowboys. I believe that this team is better than the Giants to get it done on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Giants haven't looked all that great over the last couple of weeks, and Cowboys have just continued to look a little bit better each week. And with that convincing win over the Vikings, I like the Cowboys getting it done in Jerry World on Thanksgiving. Dallin, night game, Thursday night. The New England Patriots, they're leaving Foxborough to head over to Minnesota to take on the Minnesota Vikings. Tough loss for the Vikings last week. Really bad look. I expect a bounce-back win for the Vikings in this one. Give me the Vikes over the Pats.
Yeah, I'm going to roll with Minnesota as well. Mitch, Patriots will serve a tough test. Bill Belichick, not an easy out. But I think Minnesota bounces back with a three-point victory on Thursday night, Thanksgiving night, to wrap up a great day of football. Love Thanksgiving football. It's the best.
Obscure prediction. Vikes go up early. Third quarter, we see Bailey Zappe.
Okay. Mac Jones out, Bailey Zappe in on Thanksgiving. You love to see it. Mitch, let's jump to Sunday morning. Slate, the Houston Texans are leaving the Lone Star State and headed to Miami to take on the Miami Dolphins. Dolphins gonna win this game. Gonna win it big. I've got Miami.
Finn's big in that one. Following that game, Cincinnati, they're leaving the home of Skyline Chili to take on the Tennessee Titans down in Music City. Give me Cincinnati on the road. I think that they're doing a really good job with the absence of Ja'Marr Chase, doing a great job of keeping this offense rolling. Joe Mixon's still up in the air whether or not he's going to be in play. He's in concussion protocol, but I think that they're doing a good job at piecing together an offense to get it done. I know we just talked about the Titans being a really solid team and just pencil them in. I'm going to take Cincinnati in a close one.
This was one of the toughest matchups for me to pick this week, Mitch. I think this is a real toss-up between the Bengals and the Titans. But as we mentioned, this Tennessee team's been impressive. I'm rolling with Vrabel. I'm rolling with the Titans at home. Give me Tennessee in this one in what should be one of the best games of the week. Mitch, following that, the Denver Broncos, they're leaving the Mile High City, and they're headed to my Carolina Panthers.
Garbage game of the week?
Yeah. This is it. Yep. Let's hear it.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Mitch, I don't view this as garbage game of the week. I view this as revenge for Super Bowl 50. That's what I'm thinking about this week. And we've got yet another starting quarterback for the Panthers. It's Sam Darnold this week. I tweeted this out earlier today. I get to see my Panthers play in about 2.5 weeks. And I cannot tell you how genuinely excited I am that I have no idea who's going to be starting quarterback for us that game. I have no idea in 3 weeks' time if it's going to be PJ. Is it back to Baker? Will it be Sam Darnold? It's one of my joys in what has been an awful season for Carolina. But we get revenge for Cam. We get revenge for Von Miller's Super Bowl MVP performance. I'm getting Carolina at home in this one. Revenge,
Dallin,
for Super Bowl 50, Mitch.
I really wanted to say keep pounding this week. I think Denver does get that fourth win of the year. Fourth of probably their 5 wins this year. I'm not saying they're going to win much more. I do think they get it done against Carolina on the road. Give me the Broncos on the road. Following that game, the Bears. They're leaving the Windy City and heading over to the Big Apple to take on the New York Jets. Got to be crazy, Dallin. You got to be crazy if you're not taking my Bears. Give me the Bears. Bear down over the Jets. Justin Fields looking great.
Yeah, you know, all those Jets fans who wanted Fields over Wilson are probably dreading Sunday. But I think we get a bounce back. I'm not Zach Wilson big game. I think Jets' ways of winning clearly this season are not Zach Wilson having big games. It's Zach Wilson doing very little and doing it efficiently. That's the path for formula for winning for the Jets. And I do believe they win this game, Mitch. They are a better team than the Bears. Despite the improvement for the Bears offense and Fields running, rushing ability and what that's unlocked. But Jets bounce back. Defense steps up. Low scoring win for the Jets at home.
24-10 Bears calling it right now.
Okay. Following that, Mitch, the Atlanta Falcons are headed to the nation's capital to take on the Washington Commanders. This was another tough game for me to pick. Between the Cincinnati, Tennessee, and this one, these are the two I lasted longest on. But I am rolling with the ATL in this one. Give me the Falcons getting the win on the road.
You know, there's something exciting about Taylor Heinicke. I don't know what it is. He just adds like a little bit of electricity to this team. They're getting some players back this week. Commanders gonna be rolling in this one. I like Commanders convincingly at home over the Atlanta Falcons. Following that game, Tampa Bay, they are leaving the state of Florida to head up to the best city in Ohio. That's the CLE, Cleveland, to take on the Brownies. Tampa Bay. Still Tom Brady, Cleveland struggling, not really sure where they're at. Tampa Bay struggling, not really sure where they're at. But I'm just going to, for the pure fact that Tom Brady is on one side of the ball, I'm going to take Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over the Browns.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Tampa Bay for the same reason, Mitch, because I feel very weird about both of these teams. They both seem like weird teams in weird spots, but... Tampa Bay is going to be a little more motivated. They are leading their division. They are in the driver's seat there. So I think they got to get some wins. I think they do it here against Cleveland. Final Sunday morning game, Mitch, the Baltimore Ravens. They're headed south. They're headed to the swamps of Jacksonville to take on Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars. Give me Lamar Jackson and the Ravens getting it done on the road. I think Jacksonville will put up a fight. This is a frisky, tough Jags team, but Baltimore gets it done.
Lamar in the swamp, easy all day. Give me the Ravens. Ravens in this one. Dallin, this is the Sports Hour Bowl 2.0 because our fathers will be attending this game. The Las Vegas Raiders are headed up to the Emerald City to take on the Seattle Seahawks. Your dad, a Seahawks fan. My dad, a Raiders fan. Sorry, Dad. Seahawks get this one done at home. Give me the Seahawks.
Yeah, we're going 12th man here. Give me the Hawks at home. Tough place to play, Lumen Field.
Very tough.
And the Raiders, despite the overtime win against Denver, and maybe you'd hope, can that spark something for this Raiders team in the back half of the season? Maybe it will, but I don't think it's going to be enough to get a win over a Seahawks team who, if they want to make the playoffs, they got to keep winning some games. They got to pull some of these ones, these must-win games like teams with the Raiders at home. Give me Seattle. Mitch, following that game, the Los Angeles Chargers headed a little bit east to Arizona to take on the Cardinals. I'm rolling with Herbie and the Chargers in this one. Could be Kyler. Maybe Colt McCoy again for Arizona. That certainly is playing a factor in my decision here. As up and down as the Chargers have been this season, this will be an up week. I think Chargers.
Yeah, things are a mess right now in Arizona. Could, like you said, could be Kyler, could be Colt McCoy, could be Trace McSorley for all we know. It could be him. So, look, I'm rolling with Herbie as well and the Chargers. Give me the Chargers on the road in the desert. Following that game, the Saints are leaving the Big Easy to head over to the City by the Bay in San Francisco. Santa Clara, actually. They play in Santa Clara to take on the San Francisco 49ers. Give me the Niners at home. Pretty easy one here. I think the Niners went in a route.
Yeah, Niners playing really well. New Orleans, gonna, you know, win some games they shouldn't. But I don't think they're gonna be able to get this one done on the road. Rolling with San Francisco in this one, Mitch. Following that, what should be on paper a fantastic game before the season definitely will not be. The Los Angeles Rams headed to the Arrowhead. Take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Rams Chiefs before the season, you would have circled this one. You'd have thought Sunday night football flex, like this could have been big time. It will not be, though. It will not be. Stafford, you know, left this last week's game after not starting the week before. Cooper Kupp's out for the season. They just waived Darrell Henderson, their leading rusher for the season. It is down bad in LA. Kansas City by a million.
Yeah, this is a bad, bad, bad look for the Rams. Crazy to think that just a few years ago, a short few years ago, this was an all-time game, one of the highest scoring games in NFL history. Yeah. And now it is a matchup destined for blowout. Give me the Chiefs in this one at home in Arrowhead. Going to be a tough one for the Rams. Long day for them. Following that, Sunday Night Football down. We got the Green Bay Packers. They are leaving the state of Wisconsin to head over to the city of brotherly love to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. Ugly win last week for the Eagles. I think they bounce back well here against a poor Packers rush defense. I am going to take Philadelphia at home to get this one done over the Rat King and the Rat People of Green Bay.
Well, Mitch, I'm taking the Rat People and the alcoholic Wisconsin here and the Packers. I'm taking the Packers on the road on Sunday night. I think this Philly team is hitting a rough stretch. I think this is sort of the culmination of it all with an embarrassing Sunday night loss to a bad Packers team. And a close one, an ugly one, like 2017, some just weird, ugly game. But I'm going to roll with Green Bay to do this sneaky thing over the last half of the season and sort of mess things up, muck it up. They're not going to make the playoffs. They won't get there, but they're just going to ruin some teams week by week, I think. So rolling with Green Bay on Sunday night, I don't feel great. But
that's yucky. That's yucky.
Monday night, like, this is not great, though. This could have also been garbage game of the week, by the way. Yeah. We won't give it, but that's okay. Monday Night Football, Pittsburgh Steelers headed to Indy, take on the Colts. Jeff Saturday, Mike Tomlin. Talking about polar opposites on the coaching spectrum. Kenny Pickett, Matt Ryan. I'm rolling with the Pittsburgh Steelers in this one. I'm rolling with Kenny Pickett. He's looking better. He is showing some things as a rookie. It's all you want to see. Just flashes of good moments from Kenny. Can he manage the offense? Can he get integrated? I think they get a nice little win here on Monday night.
I think this will be a close game, and like I mentioned earlier, big culture shift for the Colts over the last couple of weeks with the introduction of their new head coach. Look for Saturday to get it done on a Monday. Give me the Colts on Monday Night Football.
I see what you did there. Well, that was well done. That was well played.
Oh, thanks,
that was
man.
Well played. Well, that's going to do it for the quick picks, folks. That's going to do it for the podcast. We appreciate you sticking around, hanging out, as you always do. If you don't already, follow the socials. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys. You can follow the TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. Also, check out the website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you can become a permanent part of the conversation. Go on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Leave us a voice message. We would love to hear from you. Any question that you have to ask here on the podcast, we will play live right here on the podcast and answer. That's once again anchor.fm/thesportshourguys to become a permanent part of the Sports Hour conversation. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you look us up. You will find the Sports Hour. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating review. Tell us that we suck, because, Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better. And as we mentioned, the beginning of the podcast next week, episode 150, we're doing a live stream of the podcast. Details coming on the Instagram page early next week. So check us out there if you don't already. Drop the follow at the Sports Hour Guys. Stay tuned in there. We'll give you a time and date because we want you to be a part of it. We want to interact with you, the listeners. That's why we're doing it live. It's why we want to plan this out. So, you know, we'll figure out best time and date to do that. But we want you to be a part of it. We got some fun stuff planned and looking forward to celebrating 150 episodes of this weird podcast that we started, my friend.
Yeah, you know? It's weird.
Three and a half years later or whatever it's been. Crazy.
It's been wild ride. Been a wild ride.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Fun. We love doing it. We're looking forward to a fun podcast next week. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Spend some time with family. Take some time to reflect on what you're grateful for in your life. It's an important thing to do. It's an important time to sit back and reflect. Perspective is huge. We get caught up in the mundane movements of life, and this opportunity to step back and reflect. I hope you guys take advantage of that, and you know, we hope you have a happy Thanksgiving here from Mitch, Mo, and I.
That's right. That's right. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Eat some good food for us. We love it. We love good food.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know what? Ditch the white meat. Go for the ham. Life's too short. Ooh. Life's Ooh. Too short.
Okay.
Ditch the white meat. Go for the ham.
I love it. How about some prime rib, baby?
Ooh, that's a hard choice, too. Ooh!
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking
yeah.
big. You can thinking. Tell I don't have to pay for Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah. I'll take two.
Oh, man. All righty, guys. That's going to do it for us. Until next time, we love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
And we're thankful for you. See ya!